Once more under the breach, dear friends.
Else fill up the wall with our English dead.
Good morning again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and welcome to another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jake and...
Jeff McClure.
Together...
Am I on the right mic?
I think you are now. A minute during the intro, I was hearing everything that your hands did and nothing that your mouth did.
Oh, well, it's because I was using sign language.
Right. So, audible sign language.
Right.
Snap it. Yeah.
All right.
So this is the Personal Wealth Coach. There are two of us in this program, and then you. However many of you there are out there. At least none, at the very least. Yes, it's true. We are both bald. We are both going to be talking about the economy, about why banks fail, and how to avoid bank failures, how to make huge amounts of money in the market. We can talk about how Will Rogers said to do that.
Start off with a large fortune, invest it.
Well, this is how to make a small fortune in the market. Yeah, you start off with a large fortune.
Right.
It is also possible to maintain a large fortune, but you got to do it right. All right. So, and also Will Rogers, buy a stock. When it goes up, sell it. If it doesn't go up, don't buy it in the first place.
Well, people have done that.
Yeah, it's just called fraud.
With options. Yeah, they figured out how to, since they're running their own company's options, what they did is they arranged for themselves to buy the stock retroactively when it was lower than it was when they sold it.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yes.
It's like if the blackjack dealer told you what the cards were going to be. Man, lovely. So this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and we're going to talk about lots of strange things today. We've had a lot of questions to us about the bank failure of Silicon Valley Bank, SVB. We've also got other stuff to talk about, lots of good stuff to talk about. But before we do that, we have to tell you all the disclosures. We are bald. We are bearded. Our firm, The Personal Wealth Coach, is also the name of this program. And the firm is registered with the SEC to give fiduciary investment advice. Now, does that mean that the SEC somehow favors our firm? No. In fact, if anything, it's brought our firm to their attention, which may not be what you want in a governmental regulatory situation. But we like that they do what they do, and we like that they're curmudgeons, and they go around with a big stick and smack people for taking other people's money. That doesn't mean that they're going to like us. We like them. It's a different thing. Okay, so is there a little bit overpower sometimes? Maybe, but that's not up to us. All right. Just because we're registered with them to give investment advice and fiduciary goodness, we can't do that on the air, though. That doesn't mean we can do that here. We can't. There's privacy issues. We don't know all of you or none of you. If there's none of you listening, then all of you would be none of you. How's that for opposing infinite mathematics? Mm-hmm. All or nothing is sometimes nothing. Let's see. So those are the big ones. So you want to give the deeming? You want to get your deem on or your demon?
The information that we present on this educational radio program has been obtained from sources we deem to be reliable, but we make no warranty or guarantee as to the accuracy or completeness of said information.
Very nice. We do give full warranty that all information that we do not give was not given by us. Thank you. I want to make that very clear to everyone present or not present. Please raise your hand if you're not. Thank you. The last thing is we do not pay for this radio program. We are not paying the studio to be here. They are not paying us to be here. It is a mutual, is it communist when that happens? I don't know. They're making money on it. We do pay for advertising on the station for the radio program at the going rate for advertisement, as they do as well, though I don't think they pay themselves for it. I think they give themselves some kind of a discount. I don't know why. Just a thought. And that's the end of our disclosure. So what happened this week in the market?
Something happened in the market?
I don't know. There was a farmer's market, and there was a big dust up between two drunken people at the farmer's market. But I don't think that's what we're talking about.
Well, when it comes to the stock market, something interesting did happen. It was a rough week. The S&P 500, the primary methodology, the primary indicator we use to follow the market and say, this is what the market did. It dropped 4.56% for the week, which was relatively a lot, of course. It closed at 3861.59. And if you've been listening to us for any length of time, you recognize we said, keep an eye on that 4,000 mark. The 4,000 mark is a real indicator whether the market is on the way up or on the way down. Well, this is on the way down. First Chairman Powell, then other members of the Federal Reserve Board have continued to beat the drum, saying very clearly that interest rates are going to go, are very likely to go higher than the pundits and probably the people in the bond market think, and they will stay higher longer than those people think. And I really don't know that a lot of folks have got that yet. I think they still expect at some point, matter of fact, I just read an article yesterday strongly advising from Morningstar, who I normally a very trustworthy source, strongly advising that you buy a bunch of bonds right now because there's a recession coming. And when the recession comes, interest rates will drop and you'll make a big profit on bonds. And I just went, oh, man.
Yeah. Oh. One of the things that I should point out here, I know we're still in the middle of the radio announcement of the market and so on, but it's important. One of the tenets of the Federal Reserve at the moment, this has been true for about 18 years now, wasn't always true, but it's been very closely protected by the Federal Reserve for the last almost two decades, is that they tell you what they're going to do in advance, and they get as explicit as they can about it, and they do it in more detail than you want to hear. Well, why are they doing that? Well, because the studies all show that when they do that, you're less surprised when they do the thing that they've been telling you that they're going to do. I know somebody had to get some large study grants to get this one figured out. People are less surprised when you tell them about the surprise party before it happens, just for some reason. Well, so they've kept to this tenet of informing people what their intent is long term. It still causes shocks in the market when they actually do what they said they were going to do, which is humorous on many layers for me, because people try to second guess them. The reality is that the Federal Reserve has been saying we might have a recession or we might not quite a bit recently. And they're also saying that the interest rate is going to remain up anyway, because their job is to fight inflation, not to fight recessions. And that's the thing that most articles don't understand. Their job is not to keep us out of a recession. Nowhere in their job does it say stay out of a recession or help us when we're in one. Their job is to protect our currency. And if we have inflation, they'll put us in a recession to get us out of it. Okay, back to you. Sorry about that.
Well, anyway, the members of the Federal Reserve Board, particularly the voting members, were saying over and over and over again that interest rates are going to be higher longer than people expect. And the market started to get that finally. And when they started to get it, they started looking around and realized that there's a lot of companies out there, particularly the tech companies, the ones that soared in 2022 and are soaring again in this market bounce that we've been going through. Those companies' profitability was based on, if you look at the guts of the company, you realize that their profitability is largely based on the fact that they can borrow short term at nearly zero interest rates. So they can take their time making a profit. So they basically are getting free money that they can borrow to make profits, borrowing from places like Silicon Valley Bank and other places like that. And we'll get into that in a minute too. But the issue is the market began, the people who are in the stock market begin to look at the prices of these high-tech companies and look underneath the hood and realize that, yeah, their projected profitability is based on the concept that interest rates will be low in the future. And so the selling started, and it gradually all week wound down. And then on Friday, as SVB Bank failed, that's a mouthful.
Well, it's just FV, the B in SVB is bank. So it's like ATM machine. You'll say the last letter a lot of times,
right,
if you keep adding it back in.
I got that. But the SV Bank then, because it's important to recognize that SVB is a bank.
Yes.
And
a true
when
bank,
I first,
not
right,
a crypto shadow bank. It's a real bank.
And so when SVB is in trouble, I would think most people would not have realized we're talking about an FDIC insured traditional bank. And because most of the time when a bank is named, the last word in the naming is bank. Well, in this case, B stands for anyway. Let me go on. So let's put the market in perspective right now. Well, another thing came up this week, and we'll talk about that more, is the economy last month added 311,000 new jobs, which is a lot more than we need to be steady state and a lot more probably than the SEC wanted. But there's a silver lining to that, and we'll get to that too. The SPX, the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index, is still up 0.58% year to date. That's good. It's 7.8% higher than it was in mid-October of last year. It's about 73% higher than it was 3 years ago in March, which is a little distorted because 3 years ago in March is when we had the bear market of 2020, but it is now down 19.43% from its high in early 22. So is the market up or down? Well, it totally depends on whether you're a long-term investor or a short-term investor. If you're a long-term investor, the market is up very nicely, very healthy rise in the market over the last 3 and 5 years. If you're a short-term speculator, it's scary as all get out because it's down. Unless, of course, you got in October, in which case you have a nice gain. So it all depends on where you are and how you want to look at it. The other stock market indicator, the CRSP U.S. Mid-Cap Value Index, fell 6.67% for the week. It's in smaller companies. It's at 2280.68. It has now got a 2.36% decline this year, and it is about 12% below its all-time high in January 2022. Again, to put that in contrast, if we take from the high to the low, the S&P 500 is down almost 20%, and mid-cap value slice of the stock market is down about 12%. And those are both kind of what we would expect under the circumstances we have right now. The 10-year U.S. Treasury note did something sort of interesting. It fell to 3.7% yield. Now, again, I want to point out something here that a lot of people, no matter how many times I tell them, or we tell them, it's hard to get your mind around. When interest rates fall, the value of bonds on the open market, the secondary market, rise. When interest rates rise, the value of the bonds falls on the open market. And that's critical in understanding what went on in SVP. It's been up near 4% since about November. But now it's down to 3.7, which is not a huge drop, but it's a significant drop. It's about, it's about an 8% drop in interest rates at the 10-year point. However, the yield curve, which we have been looking at quite hard now for some time, is even more inverted. As a matter of fact, the yield curve in the bond market is the most inverted that I can find anywhere since we've been keeping record on these things. The 6 months U.S. Treasury bill, which if you annualize what it's paying right now, it's well above 5%. Even the 90-day T-bill annualized, and admittedly, you can't hold one for a year, so you're not going to get 5%. You're only going to get a quarter of that because 90 days is a quarter of the year, is yielding over 5%. While at 10 years, we have, as I just said, 3.7%. And at 30 years, if you buy a 30-year bond from the you loan your money to the federal government for 30 years, they'll pay you 3.7% right now. But if you loan it to them for 6 months, they'll pay you the equivalent of an annualized rate of 5%. So that is upside down.
We've got a lot of questions out there about the bank collapse. Refer back to this in our conversation later. Remember what we're saying here about the inverted yield curve, because it's a big part of what happened with the bank.
It is. And this is something that people are just not just inverted, but there's a whole realm of things happening here that haven't happened in a long time.
They've happened before, and it's well documented how they happened.
Yeah. And
but it's been a while.
I'm old enough and have been in this business long enough to see the last time it happened. And very frankly, it is astonishing the parallels. We are definitely repeating history, but anyway, we'll get into that later. West Texas Intermediate crude oil fell, that's WTI, fell about 4% to 76.61. It's still within the trading range it has been in for some time, but it's the lower end of it. That's good news because it means a little ways down the road, you will see the gas and diesel prices at the pump dropping. And that's what's going on in the markets. Well, a lot more is going on in the markets than that. I mean, we could go on for 2 hours about the markets, but That's all I want to talk about right now.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, we have, you know, the failure of SVB and Silvergate are 80% of our questions. We've got Inquisitor John, who is our most faithful and loyal questioner. He questions us on everything. Thank you for questioning us. Inquisitor John has his first question. He's got several, and we've got several others out there on top of that. The subject of his email is federal stress test, and then obviously referring to Silicon Valley Bank, SVB. As the 16th largest bank in the U.S., I thought the required stress testing was supposed to keep this from happening. So it's not really he has a question mark on the end of that. Like, but that's the question. What happened here? Why is it that the stress test, this is a big bank. They have lots of billions of dollars in deposits. And aren't we all supposed to be aware of what's happening at the banks since the financial crisis and all that good stuff? And you have told me that you are loaded for bear on the subject. You have dug deep. I have some details, but mostly just from articles, and then a lot of background academically as to how this happens. So I'll be probably more generalized on the subject, maybe historically, and you can zoom into the nuts and bolts, the brass tacks.
I can answer the stress test question first, and then I'll summarize what happened at SVP. The stress test that's being done on the banks tests them against a situation where there is a major financial collapse somewhere. For example, the euro collapses because the European Monetary Union breaks up or something. And in that kind of stress, interest rates fall. So anytime we get a major economic disaster someplace, interest rates tend to fall. And as a result, that's the kind of test. That's what happened in 2008, 2009 is we had some collapses and interest rates fell and people couldn't pay their loans. And a whole series of things went with that. Well, none of that happened with SVB. What happened with SVB was really fairly simple. They have a bank that is proud of its technological base and the base where it is in the Silicon Valley. And they opened it up. It was a really good idea to open it up because there were a tremendous number of people in startup tech companies over the past year, several years, 10 years, that had a lot of money because they did an IPO and they sold their company and they received tremendous amounts of cash and they needed someplace to park it. You got your hand up.
Yeah, I'm just going to throw in a detail here to back this up. According to the FDIC, 90% of the deposits as of the end of the year at SVB were uninsured. That means they were above the $250,000, 90% of their deposits. So that's who their customers are. Go ahead.
One of the things that SVB was doing was advertising insured savings. And yeah, they are insured by the FDIC. But if you read the fine print at the bottom, they're insured up to $250,000 per account. But that was their big drumbeat. We're safe. We're secure.
And let's just say that you should look that up specifically when it comes to joint accounts. It's different and all that stuff. So don't just say it's all insured. This is what messed up SVB out there. So do your research on what FDIC covers. Go ahead.
Okay. So SVP became the go-to bank socially and every other way for another reason besides the fact that they were saying, we're in Silicon Valley, you're in Silicon Valley, so come give us your money.
Right.
Rather than loaning money, they were having a tremendous inflow of deposits. Well, let me explain what a deposit is when it goes to the bank. You're thinking, I deposited money at the bank. No, you loaned money to the bank. And the bank is paying you an interest rate on the loan that you made to the bank. SVB was paying typically around 1%. Now, if you recall a year or so ago, when SVB was hitting its peak deposits, if you could squeeze 0.5% out of the bank, you were real proud of yourself.
1%? 0.5% a year. That's the lottery winning right there.
And they were paying 1% and sometimes as much as 2% on certificates of deposit, on time deposits and so on, huge deposits. And nobody else was paying them, which is, by the way, a big red flag on the bank.
Yeah. Anytime How do you they see that happening.
Well, you see, banks normally banks make loans to people and businesses and they charge them an interest rate that's higher than they're paying on their deposits. And that's how banks make money. But when they make a loan to you or me or a business or whatever, they have to set aside a reserve amount of money where they're not making any money to cover the possibility that that loan will go bad and the people won't pay their debts. That's normal banking procedure. SVB, in this effectively zero interest environment that we've been in for several years before this year, simply bought long-term treasuries where they could get 3%. So if I'm loaning money to the federal government at 3% and I'm paying you 1.5%, for example, you're thrilled with your 1.5% because the other banks are only paying about 0.5%. I have a 1.5% profit and I don't have to set any reserves aside because the federal government is not going to default on the money that they borrowed from me.
The problem with that is when interest rates change and you go to sell the bond, that's the long-term bond, it hurts. Yeah. So,
what happened next was about three things. First, as interest rates started to rise, the tech companies, as I mentioned during the market summary, the tech companies who were surviving on near zero interest rate loans that they were rolling over every 30 days or so, suddenly stopped making money in cases where they had been making money and they still had expenses and they still wanted to stay in business. So this huge amount of money that they had dumped into SVB Bank is there and they started making withdrawals. Well, that's perfectly normal behavior. So as interest rates rose and these startup tech companies in Silicon Valley did worse and worse, they started withdrawing more and more money. So they're withdrawing money, which is what people do when they need their money and they have it in the bank. So they're taking the money out of the bank. Well, SVB now has to find cash to pay these people. How are they going to get cash when they've got to invest in long-term bonds? They sell the bonds. Well, if you have been following what we've been saying and writing for some time, the long-term Morningstar's, for instance, long-term bond index and Bloomberg's long-term bond index right now are down about 20% from last year. That means if they had $1,000 they had loaned to the United States government, saying this is very rough and it isn't exact, but it's a good concept that you'll understand. And they sold that $1,000 bond that's been paying them 3% interest. They only got back, let's say, $800. Meanwhile, the laws that were passed following the financial collapse of 2008 and 2009 did something interesting. It requires that they mark their loans to the market. Well, since a treasury bond is a loan to the federal government, it has to be marked to the market. And once a month, they come out with this balance sheet that says, guess what? The money we have loaned out is now worth less than when we loaned it.
Even though it's loaned to the federal government, and if it's held to maturity, nobody doubts that the government's going to pay that.
And so these balance sheets started coming out indicating that their underlying value of what they held was dropping. And people are pulling money out of the bank. And then the death knell came. And Jake, you said it was Peter Thiel. I presume there were other people too started.
A lot of venture capitalists.
Who looked at this and said, golly bum, folks, all my friends, I'm going to tell you, get your money out of that bank because its underlying assets are falling. And so people started taking money out of the bank. And of course, the more money they took out of the bank, the more treasuries SVB had to sell. And the more they sold, the greater their losses were. And they kept reporting them. And then there was a run on the bank, quite literally, with people standing outside taking their money out of the bank. And SVB had to shut the doors and the FDIC had to step in and take it. And there's a lot of crying in beer going to be going on now because people didn't think about the fact that if the bank fails, FDIC covers some deposits up to a certain amount. So I'm going to be very vague here so that you'll read the fine print when you put money in a bank. And a tremendous amount of that money was anything but insured and anything but secure. As a matter of fact, the tremendous amount of money Jake just used, I didn't see the 90% number, but apparently about 90% of their deposits were in a position where literally they were as safe as the bank. And the bank is a stock company. It is the equivalent of putting all your fortune in a single stock. How secure is that? I don't care if it's bank stock or anything else. And the end result is now that money is not available to them, which is going to put a huge crunch. You're going to see secondary. We've already starting to see the secondary effects of SVB going under as one of the stable coins broke the dollar. You're going to see more because these companies that were depending on that money being there to draw out to keep operating because they're losing money don't have the money available to draw out. What happens next? I can go into that if you'd like, but you probably have some things you want to say.
Well, let me kind of take it from a big picture perspective, historical. This is something that is really, really, really fundamental to your understanding of banks. Let's go back. Playing the heart music would be appropriate here. I'd have to find it to play it. Let me see if I can. Back in time we go to when banks are getting their names. This is the mid-1600s. Why are they called banks? Well, they're called banks because in English, most of the banks in London were on the banks of the Thames River. Yes, they weren't called banks yet. They were jewelry stores. And you would put your candlesticks and your necklaces and your silverware, which was really where you also acquired your wealth, because no one was paying interest at that point. That was usury. It was a really horrible sin. So where did you put your stuff to keep it safe? Well, you went to the jewelry store who had guards, and they dug a bunch of holes in the bank because it was easy to dig there, and filled them up with rock walls. So the bank's full of now this metal, and it's got little tags on them that say this belongs to the Jones family, or it's usually with a ribbon and a piece of paper. Well, there was a horrible, horrible fire in 1666. And yes, there were all kinds of religious meanings at the time and prophecies and so on. And it was foretelling the end of the planet because of the year and all of that. Well, London basically burned down. And this is also, I've told you where we get the word bank. Now we're going to get another one that we use more widely even than the word bank, and that's confusion. To fuse metal together is to take iron and weld it in place. You fuse it together, it welds to itself. Confusion is when you take alloys that don't generally mix and you fuse them together. They don't fuse, so you have to weld them with something else. That's confused. When the fire hit London, huge numbers of banks burned down, and the vaults got hot enough that all the metal melted together. And it was called the Great Confusion. Talk about a financial collapse. Not only was it not insured, nobody knew which part of what puddle of metal belonged to whom.
Could I throw another word in there since you're doing words?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
You said collapse.
Yes.
SVB Bank just lapsed.
That's correct.
When the stablecoin company that broke the dollar and probably going to have a run on its deposits now lapses, that will be a collapse.
Right. And if we look at Silvergate Bank, which failed 2 days before SVB, but a much smaller bank, one in which SVB had a lot of debt to them. SVB had loans to Silvergate. Silvergate just collapsed. And then, well, it lapsed. Now SVB has collapsed. So confusion came because nobody knew who owned what. Except, and this is interesting, there were a few jewelry stores that at the time had just switched to calling themselves vaults or banks. And they were keeping record of the weight and the purity of the alloy in books. And they were able to get the books out. And they used this really new technology in England at the time. The Medici family had been doing it for about 200 years, called double entry bookkeeping. And they knew who owned what at the banks. So when they came back, they were able to set up banking regulations on who made it through the collapse and the confusion. And that banking regulation subsists to this day. And you'll like the person who came up with it, Sir Isaac Newton, who, if he were alive today, would get the Nobel Prize in medicine, chemistry, physics, and economics.
Not to mention math.
Yes, and math. Well, he had to define physics and math so that the rest of us could give awards in it. So yeah. That the concept of confusion and collapse, there is no way that you can have a bank that's profitable. Any bank that is profitable, there's no way that they can survive if a large portion of their creditors, if their depositors, if you will, come and collect their money, because they've loaned out some of the money. That's how they stay profitable. And the Federal Reserve sets this requirement based on the Great Confusion of 1666 that says you have to have a certain amount of reserves set aside just in case the bank melts. And bankrupt used to mean where the bank broke and the river flowed into the city, but it meant that the river actually broke into the vault and the gold all got swept downstream.
Right.
So bankruptcy is more than what we call it. And when the bank goes bankrupt, it literally means their vault got broken. Because yeah, the balances were right. And now back to you. That was the
if the historical. Bank erupts, then the money is lost.
Yes, right. Exactly. So back to you. Now that we've filled in a bunch of words that we use all the time and most people don't know where they came from, this is easier to understand.
Well, the collapse will continue. We will see other things, what sometimes referred to by the English as knock-on events from this. But I guess the important thing to remember at this point, first off, let me say something positive. The rest of the banking system in the United States was not doing what SVB is doing. They're doing it some. They have some treasury securities on their books, and they are taking some hits from that. But SVB had by far the largest percentage of their money in treasuries, which, by the way, according to the regulators and everybody else, was perfectly secure. And if you read any of the financial stuff that comes out, popular financial stuff, they're still beating the drum saying bonds, treasury bonds are secure. Buy treasury bonds. You can't lose money, which is false. You can lose money in treasury securities. Not that they're going to default. The probability of default is zero. You can lose money in a bank account. How can you lose money in a bank account? Well, if it's not FDIC insured, you're going to lose some money and you need to do your homework there. Here is the issue, though. We need to do our homework. If somebody says this money is guaranteed, this money is insured, we are an agent, we are something that insures, or we have safe place for your money, you need to read the fine print. You need to be aware when you put large amounts of money anywhere, particularly when they offer guarantees or promises or whatever, that something is going on internally where they think they can make more money than they're paying you. And you need to understand what they're doing so that when it stops, you will recognize that it stops. And if you lock it up, and then fortunately, a lot of places are locking your money up, saying you can't get it back. And if we fail, too bad, you won't get any money, or you may not get any money. And you don't even realize that that's going on. That is so important once you get past FDIC insurance levels or a series of other insurance levels of different other organizations that are backed by the federal government. Go ahead.
Now, this is kind of what we've been focusing on from is the historical perspective, and then you more directly, how a individual out there, how our listeners can do some due diligence to look at what's going on here. Now, the last piece of that, I would say, is what did the regulators do wrong? And there's a great, great article in the Wall Street Journal, and there is a quote from Eric Rosengren. And those of you that listen to our program in the Global Financial Collapse heard us quote him extensively. He was the head of the head regulator, the top bank regulator of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston, leading up to the global financial collapse. And then he was appointed president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston from 2007 to 2021. Why? I mean, the global financial collapse is happening, and they took this regulator who's the one that's supposed to be spotting all this stuff and put him in charge. Well, because he did spot it all. And there's all kinds of stuff that he wrote to the Federal Reserve at that point saying, hey, we need to do these things that we're not doing, and we're doing them now. So his statement, his quote here has a lot of weight. What he says very specifically, and this is purely to the regulators, is that they should have known their portfolio was heavily weighted toward venture capital. What does that mean? The number of companies that had their deposits at that bank that were venture capital was astronomically large. There was a lot of money from one niche segment. Usually the Federal Reserve is really good at watching those niches and saying, hey, you've got to diversify your depositors a little. They should have known that their portfolio was weighted toward venture capital, and venture capital firms don't want to be taking risks with their deposits. So there was a good chance that if venture capital companies started pulling out funds, they'd do it in mass. And it doesn't matter, even if SVB had been doing everything right, if venture capital all left at once, they still would have gone down. And that's the tough part here.
Let's back the train up just a little bit to 1991.
Okay.
For many of our listeners, 1991 is about the time that the dinosaurs were walking the earth or something, but it really isn't. There was something called the savings and loan crisis in that time frame. And there were howls and complaints. Again, we went through another crisis in 2008 and 2009. People are a little more familiar with it. Why did the savings and loan crisis occur? And it parallels what Jake just said.
Yeah.
Savings and loan institutions were focused in one sector of the economy, mortgages. And when we got into a mortgage crunch, we got into a real estate crunch, they started dropping like flies. And new laws were passed and a lot of things were changed and the savings and loans were merged into something else. And we went through it and we developed a special place to park all those bad real estate investments and gradually sell them over time. And the Resolution Trust Corporation gradually sold them over time and made money. And it worked out well because we got a good system in the United States. All you have to do is go from 1991 to 2008 and watch it happen again in a different place for the same reasons. Why were people flocking to the savings and loans in 1991? Because they were offering a higher interest rate than the traditional banks. They were offering a higher interest rate because they were taking greater risk. And the system, the regulatory system, did not have a methodology of recognizing that risk, because the last time this had happened was long enough ago that everybody had forgotten about it. Fast forward to 2008, 2009, the banks were selling mortgages and they were buying mortgage bonds, and we did the same thing again. Well, fast forward to 2023. What are we, the question we have to look at is, what are we doing now where we assume something won't fail, but it's a bad assumption that is going to cause financial institutions to fail, that will cause your, if you have money in those financial institutions locked up, could cause you to lose a lot of it? That's the question that you always have to be asking. And we ask so frequently, it's scary.
We got to play some commercials, but before we do, I'm going to first give you the email addresses to get in here and have a conversation with us if you have a question. Now, the email addresses are Jeff and, or preferably, and Jake at tpwc.com. That's Tango Papa Whiskey Charlie, or The Personal Wealth Coach. And I'm going to head out to commercial on a quote from George, as played by Jimmy Stewart, in It's a Wonderful Life. No, it's a really bad impression on top of that. You're thinking that this is all wrong. It's as if I had the money back in the safe. The money's not here. Your money's in Joe's house, right next to yours, and in the Kennedy house, and Mrs. Macklin's house, and 100 others. Why, you're lending them money to build. And then, I'm not going to quote anymore. You get it. This is something that goes back throughout history. when money's loaned out, you don't have the same opportunity to withdraw. And that's just the case always. So when somebody starts talking about get your money out of a bank, quite often, if they're the first ones, or they should know better, bad things legally can happen to them. So there's some venture capital firms that organized the withdrawal of some of this money. SVB was doing some stuff it shouldn't have been doing, but it was totally legal. It wasn't like it was, you know, making money to terrorists or something. You know, they were following the rules. They just weren't thinking very well. But then a group of people decided to leave all at once. And that, if they find that they knew what they were doing in that process, there could be some pretty big financial and legal outcomes here. We got to play some commercials and we'll be back on the other side with more of The Personal Wealth Coach. I don't think we're done with this subject yet, but we'll be back and we'll talk about it later. And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jake and
Jeff McClure.
We are broadcasting live, presuming that today is Saturday, March 11th of 2023. We're also podcasting dead. Well, at least not live. That would be dead, right? We're dead casting individually on a broad spectrum on a podcast. So it's not really a broadcast. It's just
I've actually thought about this at some length, the fact that we are talking at some point in the future and we don't know it.
Yeah. So the person that is me speaking in the future doesn't know that he's going to be speaking in the future when he's speaking to you right now.
But he can make a reasonable assumption that he's going to be speaking in the future because we have a podcast being recorded.
Yes, and so, people can go to our website and listen to the whole radio programs, even going back. And it's also available podcast as well, but that's folks, a lot to listen to. I don't even listen to us.
What we do all day, we think about things like that. Only we generally think about things like that with regard to money. And it's a big subject that's kind of the understatement of the millennium.
Wait. I would say that the Y2K bug, should it have provided a lower balance in your bank account, would have been the understatement of the millennium. You see what I did there with that? It was grown a little.
I am really glad I'm wearing boots is all I've got to say.
I did it. All right, go ahead.
Well, there's actually other things out there that are happening besides the interest rate issues that are coming up, but they're all entangled with the interest rate issues. We're living in interesting times, very definitely. The corporate bond market is behaving, and you have to understand how bonds work and so on to get this straight. But the corporate bond market is clearly behaving as though nothing but boom times are ahead. While the treasury bond market, which is actually composed of bills, notes, and bonds, is behaving and screaming, we are about to have a recession, and the leading economic indicators are screaming. Matter of fact, if we look back at when the leading economic indicators and the treasury yield curve started telling us we're going to have a recession, we are clearly, according to them, in a recession right now, except
we're still growing.
That employers last month created and filled 311,000 net new jobs.
And we're getting paid more now than we were before, and unemployment still really low. So all that stuff doesn't say a recession.
But there's some the concern, and one of the reasons the market went down
Do you mind if I throw this in? Because it's only pertinent to what you just said.
Okay.
The treasury market does have a little instigation. Janet Yellen did just say that if the House doesn't pay our bills, we could collapse and not pay.
Yeah.
So I can understand why they're like, what's going on? They may not pay me.
There is a big if hanging over the economy. This is off the subject I was about to talk about, but this is so critical, folks. And you have some effect on this. If the Republicans in the House of Representatives, and that's where it's the only place it's coming from, so I'm going to name them, choose to not raise the debt limit. Well, actually, we're past the point where we've hit the debt limit. But when the federal government runs out of money and stops paying people because they can't find any more money that they can shuffle from one place to another, which could happen as early as June or as late as August, according to the analysts that I've read, we could definitely see a recession triggered at that moment by the fact that the United States government defaults on its debts, that the whole world economy runs on an assumption that the United States government will never default on its debts. If the members of Congress determine that they are willing to wreck the whole thing to get their way, then no matter how good that way is, that all bets are off at that point in the economy. All bets are off in the stock market. All bets are off everywhere, because the entire financial system, certainly of the United States and largely for the entire world, is based on a foundation sound as the dollar, that if you loan money to the United States of America, or if the United States of America owes you money, they will pay it back. And as soon as they say, I'm sorry, I know the loan is due, but we're not going to pay. Whoa, I have been trying to get my mind around the implications of that. It isn't pretty, folks. it is, there's nothing pleasant that will come of that. So that's a big issue. But there's other things going on.
Yeah. And we're about out of time for this hour. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Obviously we're going to talk more about, what's going on across the big wide economy. We're going to talk about specific things happening in Congress. But if you would like to talk to us off the air, we actually do talk to people when we're not on the air. It's really weird. I know. We talk to each other more on the air, I think, than any single time off the air. Kind of nice. The two of us get to chat and so on. But if you'd like to talk to us, we've got email addresses in here, and then we've been asking you to join the program. You can email us at Jake@tpwc.com and Jeff@tpwc.com, Tango Papa Whiskey Charlie. You can talk to us in person if you would like to talk about your portfolio and how that would affect you. We give fiduciary investment advice through the Personal Wealth Coach, and you can reach our voicemail on the weekend, real live people during the week locally at
254-947-1111.
You can reach that same line toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. Presuming you still have one of those lines attached to your house and a little ringer thing on it. Those weird ancient technologies. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, where you can read our newsletter going back a long time. See what we were saying before. Sign up for our newsletter. You can listen to our radio programs going back a long ways there, or you can find our podcasts anywhere you can find podcasts. We got all kinds of bite-sized ones or long ones, whichever ones put you to sleep fastest. If your doctor agrees, it's all good. The last thing is you can contact us through the contact form or Jake or Jeff at tpwc.com. Until next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.